The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests as individuals, and do not necessarily reflect those of advertisers or sponsors. This show is intended as education and commentary only. The producers strive for verisimilitude, but nothing said on this podcast should be taken as fact by the listener or viewer without performing due diligence. While generally safe for work, some language may be considered offensive by more sensitive viewers or listeners.
Three, two, and hello and welcome back and happy new year. It is the seventh season of Keep Your Hat On. I, of course, am Andrew, of course, with Chris, of course, with Ty, and of course, with Dr. Mark. And we got a little bit of stuff to talk about today.
Packers.
And by the way, isn't this an awesome shirt? Isn't this like the one of the best Packers shirts?
Dude.
The original?
Yeah, that's the real deal there. Sorry.
I'm sad that the transfer is bad, and this is like wearing something that shouldn't be a shirt. It should be lighter duty than that.
We shouldn't be imposing this on all the listeners in India who don't know what we're talking about.
Right, exactly. I'm absolutely besmirched with the Art Deco Acme Packers logo and all that
Andy,
stuff from back in the Curly Lambeau days.
So, Andy's besmirched.
I'm besmirched.
Do you mean
that
besotted?
Was the wrong word? Besotted be something. I know. I was already copping to the fact that I used the
bedazzled
wrong.
You were smirched before. I know. Exactly.
But I'm very gruntled today because the heat and the electricity are back on. So yeah.
Have all of you been taking that hit? Has all of you all out there been taking that same hit?
Away pretty unscathed.
Yeah. No power outage. No. But I learned some important lessons from Andy. About our furnace and what I need to do should we lose power.
Ah, okay, good. I'm glad to hear that caught for you.
Go ahead, Andy. Let him know.
No, please. I would much rather you cop to you. My thing was, I have a gas fireplace in this house, and we'll get to what this act of God was in a minute. But if it weren't for that gas fireplace, we would be screwed.
Which really kind of sucks.
Absolutely screwed.
How cold did it get out there?
You had the gas heater, but then you didn't have the electricity to turn the fans on to move the heat.
Yeah, which is kind of a kick in the nuts. Kind of a kick in the cold nuts.
Yeah.
And Ty came over and helped out. Mark, to answer your question, obviously, and one of the most significant things about this is the Portland metro area sits in kind of a weird place.
Mm-hmm.
So we are at the convergence or confluence, I guess, of two rivers. We have our local Willamette, which anybody in Wisconsin looks at that name and they go Willamette. Actually, when I got hired at the job I came out here for, the boss interviewing me in my final interview threw a thumb over his shoulder and goes, "What's the name of that river?" And I went, "Willamette?" And he's like, "You're hired." we're saddled on one side by the Willamette, but the bigger river and the one that primarily affects our weather the most is, of course, the Columbia, Roland Columbia.
Big Columbia too, isn't it? Yeah.
And the Columbia is in something, oddly enough, titled the Columbia River Gorge.
Yeah.
And if you've ever heard, or if you, and you know, everybody, including our listeners in India, know what windsurfing is, right? It's a surfboard. It's got a pivot pole on it with a cross member that you hang on to and a big sail. It looks like you're, you know, riding behind a spinnaker. Mm-hmm. That was invented in Hood River, Wisconsin. It wasn't invented out in the Pacific Ocean. It was invented in the Columbia River Gorge because the winds of the Columbia River Gorge are punishing and unforgiving and relentless.
Yeah, what you got to picture is this big trough carved into the land from up in the frozen wasteland of Canada, coming down and then making a right turn and basically all the shit blows down and Portland is at the end of that trough and it all just goes.
Well, and not only that, if, you know, if everybody, and of course there's a graphic up here right now, a royalty free graphic, because it's a map, you know, we've got this, what's called the horse saddle horn, where Oregon kind of bumps up and then heads out to the coast. And so that's up, Clatskanie, that area. That's the thing. That's where the Columbia goes. And Portland sits right at that, right before the horseshoe, the horse saddle horn starts going up north. So all this westerly prevailing wind comes screaming down the gorge and smashes into the Portland metro area at times. Sometimes it dies beforehand. But this time, it really didn't. And what we wound up getting in certain areas of Portland was the lowest that I got was 11 above, which for us is virtually unheard of.
That's still cold, man. That's cold.
Oh, yeah. It's cold no matter where.
Well, and then you factor in wind chill, and it's just...
And dampness, which you're going to get off the Pacific, too.
Nine or 10 below. And you know, the thing is, and for everybody out there listening, wind chill is kind of an erroneous thing. Wind chill is only a measurement that is concerning your skin. That's all wind chill is. The ambient temperature is the ambient temperature.
Right.
But how it feels on naked skin, that's expressly what wind chill is. It feels like -5 degrees. Mm-hmm. And we got socked. I don't know if our listeners and viewers remember in 20, right before we started the podcast, I believe we had another big one. And actually I think that was after we started the podcast. We were out of power here at Rancho Cowabunga for 9 days. We lost like $1,500 worth of food.
That was fucked up.
Yeah, the cat was just like, every time we came back home, the cat looked at us like, why do you hate me? Why do you want me to die? Why, you know, we dropped power. At first, we dropped power about 6 p.m. on Friday, Friday last, a week and a half ago.
Oh, I thought you were still talking about 20.
Oh, no. 20 was grim. 20 was grim, but
20 was rough.
20 was actually a little bit easier to manage because it was really cold. It was really bad, but the weather cleared up rather quickly. And then it was just, and the thing that people don't understand is our infrastructure out here is not designed and certainly isn't prepared for these kinds of weather events. There are there are vastly more cables bisecting going through trees than there are in Wisconsin. We have like 60% more tree coverage in our metro area than most other cities do overall. We have lots. And the other thing is that our tree roots are very quickly affected by water. And so it's storm. Yeah. It's this perfect storm, and I'll be putting up horrific looking video footage.
You said perfect storm.
I'll be putting up really horrific looking pictures right now because you're talking about 140. Here's a video. This house literally just got grazed. By 160-foot Douglas fir that just comes crashing down. And we had, at one point in time, in the first storm, 260,000 people without power in, I think, 5,000 different outage points. And so we get through that. That's the storm from Friday to Saturday.
Yeah, that was round one.
Ty kindly gets in the Ty-mobile and comes over to my place because we're out of power. and takes my partner Heather over to the hardware store and gets a little buddy heater that runs on canister gas, on canister propane, and they're safe to use inside because they're the stoichiometric ratio of gas and all that air business. Well, I love the word actually stoichiometry.
It's terrifying, actually, to say that, you know, live flames in the house, no problem.
And that's just it. It's not a live flame. That's what's nice about it. This thing's actually made to be used inside camping tents.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and that little puppy saved our... By the way, if you ever wind up with a room that's lower than 50 degrees, your bedroom, and you have a memory foam mattress... Expect an unpleasant lie down. Something happens to that viscoelastic foam when it gets under 50 degrees. I swear to God, I got into bed and I'm freezing and I'm getting into bed and I'm just like, this hurts. Why does my like bed
turn into
hurt?
A brick?
Yes, it does. And it only changes once it's sucked about 40% of your body mass
out. Yeah.
So. Wow. The next thing that happens is we now, Heather and I are settling into this routine. We did it before. I've got a little propane two burner camp stove so that we can heat some food up. And we've got like, it's still, after the first wave of the storm passes, it's still like under 20 above. And my kids' pipes froze. So I'm doing consultation on how to unfreeze pipes.
Without bursting
it's
them.
It's just bad. It's just bad. But then, we get told that they were predicting like 6 inches of snow on the valley floor here. Now we get told 48 hours afterwards that we're getting an ice storm.
More ice.
And real ice, not any snow, ice. And yeah. That...
Subaru was coated in a fourth of an inch.
Yeah, I would easily see it that much.
Yeah, my cars were too, and my driveway...
Yeah,
it was just a sheet of ice. It was a death trap.
I am showing right now video of people skating down the streets. Portland.
Did you hear that story? Did you see that video of the woman who she's on this downhill climb, incline, and she decides to just kind of scoot down on her butt rather than walk it? Ooh. But it's slick and she just keeps on going.
Any skier
will tell you, you know, the more surface area you have touching the ice,
exactly,
the faster you're going to go.
Mm-hmm. And wow. So the ice storm hits us and yeah, it's bad. What happened? Our power came back on, 48 hours after the first storm hit. And we were like, yay. And the heat comes back on. Yay. And we're getting ready for bed. And the heat like goes off. And then it comes back on at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And it goes off. And we've got this thermostat where when you walk by it, it wakes up and it knows your presence. It wasn't doing that. And so I go over to the thing and I'm like.
And then he's banging the side of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And then finally, you know, I'm just like. Okay, and this is I think this is Sunday. And And so I figure that what happened is that one of the evap line froze and it's tripping a sensor so it won't run and like do bad combustion. So the guy comes out and he goes, "No, your thermostat's fried." And part of me's just like, "Oh good, that's an easy fix, right? You got 1,000 of them in your van."
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And I'm like, well, okay. How long is it going to take? He's like, well, do you want to replace it with this unit? And I was like, yeah, because that's the one that's designed for this fancy-ass $14,000 HVAC unit that we have leveraged ourselves to the nines to have and enjoy the heat of. And he's like, yeah, okay, well, this one's going to be $800, and it's not covered.
For a thermostat?
For a thermostat, yeah. I release some gas from my body and I'm just like, so you're telling me that when the power came on, this incredibly important thing between me and my heat just shit the bed. And he's like, yeah, it happens. And I was like, no, it doesn't just happen. No. And I was like, so this is covered under warranty, right? And he goes, technically not. And I'm like, technically why? And he's like, well, you know, if it's electricity coming from the mains and something happens, it's not covered. If it were a lightning bolt, it'd be covered. And I'm like, what? How much more of an act of God do you need? And then he's like looking at me and he goes, and I mean, seriously, I'm like verbatim quoting him. He goes, you know what? This is literally a shitstorm. And I'm just going to ignore the error code on this. And I'll get it to you just saying the thing just happened to burn out. And that's covered.
Wow.
And so I'm like, dude, you are absolutely awesome. When can I expect heat? And he's just like, I can't tell you that. And I'm like, why? He's like, these things take a while to get. And I mean, yeah, comedy of errors, right? That's where we are. And so I'm like, okay, you know, no problem. So we've got the gas heater that Ty helped us go get. I am able to, and this little buddy heater, you put that thing in a 10 by 14 bedroom, it will heat that puppy up to 70 degrees in about 10 minutes. Ooh, and so we could survive. And finally on, Wednesday, our power comes back on. And Thursday, we get the call that our thermostat is in. Guy comes Friday. Cool. It's in. We're heat. Everything's good. We get up Saturday, which is yesterday, and we're enjoying our heat. And getting ready to watch the Packer game, right? And power goes out.
Second out of two, receivers left and right. Love goes under center. Jones is the single back. Watson in motion.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Love takes the snap. He'll hand it off Jones. Running back, comes back up the middle, across the five to the end zone. Touchdown, Packers.
Yes!
A 9-yard touchdown for Aaron Jones. It's his third of the game. And the Packers extend the lead again.
And so I'm sitting in the dark.
Some San Francisco fan, no doubt, is responsible.
Right, exactly. Yeah, God is a Frisco fan. But no, it did come back on. Right, I think so. Vince, man. But it has been kind of a slog. And Chris, you were out of power. Chris, is anybody else seeing Chris's video frozen up and fogged over?
Oh, weird.
Dude, he's underwater. I've heard of soft focus before, but.
Right, wow. This is. That's Chris, really I think soft. If you're using your fancy camera, it's shit the bed, buddy.
Yeah, let me.
Oh,
you're still bad.
Blurry McBlurryson.
Blurry McBlurry man. Right.
Chris, if you want to, I tell you what we'll do. I tell you I'm what we'll jump do. Out we'll jump out in. To a. We'll jump. Chris, stay put. We'll jump out to a break and we'll come back in. This is the Narrowband Broadcast Network. We're all enjoying heat today. I'm Andrew. That's Dr. Mark. That's Ty. And that's Blur McBlurson. And we'll be back in just a second. Don't go anywhere. Bye.
Thor McBlurson.
I like that. So I tell you what, let me hit stop.
The unblurring of Chris.
It's in Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, past the river running Eve of Adam
it's,
and
it's the lost McBlurson. Chapter.
Blurry.
It's in the blur chapter.
Thor McBlurryson.
No, I was just gonna say, it would actually wind up, I don't think it would be in Finnegan's Wake. It would probably be Dubliners.
Dubliners, short story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dubliners and, Finn okay, McKinney. Hello, everybody. We are back. Here's the thing that I kind of want to run with on this. One of the things that this whole thing taught me, well, it gave me more respect for preppers. I consider myself a prepper light because, again, you know, before the storm of 20, I had presence of mind to buy us a gas stove that we can use indoors in order to cook and a few other things like that. And, you know, I'm not like a number of people that I know that have, like, you know, shipping containers buried in their backyard behind, you know, berms and shit like that. Okay. But I do believe in being prepared for bad things. We are getting together a go bag in the event. And you gotta remember too, at the beginning of the pandemic when we were doing the show, we were under threat of fire here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was horrific as well. Truth of the matter is, and this is kind of what I've been telling everybody else, and there's a meme or an image going around that's saying, look, just because there's less ice on the North Pole doesn't mean that climate change isn't real. It actually proves it, because ice up there keeps the jet stream in one place. Now the ice is gone. That's and look right. at how
it's
all this shit's going
crazy.
Yeah, the polar vortexes, and, yeah.
Well, I got fires in Iceland.
Right?
Right.
Do we have to say anything more?
Yeah, well, apparently we do. And the thing about it to me is that, you know, look, I'm 55, I'm going to be 56. We're all men of a certain age. We've got a limited amount of time left. There's no chance that any of this is going to get better in our lifetime. We are now leaving this to the generations that follow. And do I feel shitty about that? Yeah, partly because people like us have been saying, you know, we really need to kind of not do this shit or we're going to fuck up the planet's HVAC system. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening.
But you are such a slacker.
Right? I know. I could have fixed it, but I chose not to.
Yeah. This is all your fault.
Well,
it really is. I will take it for the team. If it gets us in a better place to deal with it.
In true slacker fashion.
Chris, what were you saying?
Well, you're exactly right. This is our now normal. And it's that, you know, our environment, and take that term at all the different levels that it could be interpreted right. at. Is just increasingly unpredictable, and it's gonna get more unpredictable. And the best you can do is plant. And look at that, I'm all blurry McBlurry.
Yeah, I see you are again blurried.
Yeah, so
blissfully McBlurry.
We'll get there. Whatever you did,
jiggle the handle, man.
Just move.
Did you turn it off and on again?
Yeah, I didn't.
Actually, I wonder, Chris, if it might be that because you're using your phone thing, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if it might be because it's falling apart. Is your phone currently powered and tethered?
Plus, your phone is falling apart, Chris.
Yeah. No. Well, don't even get me started. That's for another episode, because I swallowed the pill and I switched over to iPhones.
Traitor.
No, it's a weird feeling.
Traitor.
The grand point of this is, this shit is not getting better in my lifetime. And it is incumbent upon me and us, I guess, to figure out ways to live with it. You know, I mean, yes, we need to work towards making it better, because this is the plant an olive tree phenomena. You know, olive gardeners never planted olive trees to harvest olives. They planted olive trees so that generations later they can harvest olives, because the fix takes a while, you know?
But, yeah, and the best we can hope to do is mitigate the change.
Other thing is that, you know, survive it, right?
And survive it, yeah.
And that's kind of where I am just today. You know, and the thing that's a real kick in the pants to me is I own a 4,800-watt generator that is buried in my side yard, sadly neglected, because back in 20, in the storm of 20, you know, I immediately said, this will never happen again. We will never go through this again. And I went out and I bought a generator, and it has sat in the side yard since, because of my depression and my growing disability. And that and the state of my shop, and by the way, there's now video of my shop showing right now, I am willing to be held accountable, because that space is my shame and will be fixed. So here you go, world. Here's my disgrace.
Show the world your
life. I had no place to work on that stuff.
Yeah.
Now I am getting it. Heather just went out today. I just bought a what's referred to as a salamander heater or a torpedo heater. It's essentially a propane burner with a fan behind it that fires a jet out.
It can take
1,000 square feet from just above freezing to take off your coat in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, and that's those things are awesome, especially
yes, they are.
Out and in now workspaces have, like your garage. And
exactly, and that's
in the shop. You've got that in the shop, dude.
Yeah, yeah, and because I need one of the other things is my disability has grown to the point where I am losing a lot of my Wisconsin credential, man. I can't deal with the cold the way I used to.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. I mean, I've only got one good hand in the first place. Getting out there in 45 degree heat and trying to turn screws and stuff. No, man, my arthritis is saying, nah, no, you're not. So
your blood thins out, man. That's what happens.
And you know what's interesting about that, too? So you guys know that I'm following, you know, I'm kind of acting like I'm pre-diabetic and I'm working on getting my blood sugar down. I test my blood sugar every morning. And while it was cold, while it was like 50 degrees in the house perpetually, my blood sugar was phenomenal. I would wake up in the morning with like 85 blood sugar, which you're supposed to be under 100. 85 blood sugar is fucking great. Ever all throughout the day, it's low. As soon as we warm the place back up, I mean, my blood sugar average for 7 days was like 91, which is unheard of for me. As soon as we warm the place up, I wake up in the morning, 114, 117.
What do you attribute that to?
I think it might be because when your body is cold, your metabolism changes and it goes into high gear to keep your organs running.
Yeah, right.
And so when your metabolism runs higher, you naturally have lower blood sugar because it's pulling the glucose out of your blood in order to power things. But this whole thing kind of has made me acutely aware again. And this is what I want opinions of from you guys. You know, I'm going to make a shirt of this. You might watch the KYHO store.
merch.
Because this is my ADHD talking. Again, I follow Adam Savage on Tested. And one of the things he says as an ADHD person as well is, I am a creature that benefits from routine. And I definitely am. And getting jettisoned out of my routine, summarily fired out of the cannon of comfort and into a week of off and on misery, it kind of made me wonder. I mean, we're all of a certain age. We've all got our routines and our rhythms that we like to follow. But do you guys think that there is a significant difference between routine, habit, and like ritual? Because I kind of see that things are, for me, are crossing a little bit. And I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that I'm neurodivergent, that I'm ADHD.
No, I think you got it right. I think they are separate, but I do think that there's a fair amount of overlap.
Yeah.
So I think the one that's trickiest for me, and I think the one that doesn't even overlap, I think it's an overlay, is the idea of ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the ways, I mean, I'm going to come at this from a very secular point of view, and then I'm going to come at it from a little bit of a spiritual woo-woo point of view. The secular point of view is that I have been... And honestly, this really started for me in college, Mark, where I understood, because I was now in a different learning environment that allowed me to learn kind of my own way, unlike high school that I dropped out of because it was just, I couldn't fit into that style of learning. But give me a book and tell me, figure out what this means. Just leave me alone. I'm good. But one of the things that I figured out was, for me, the making something into a ritual keeps me on track, keeps me from wandering, and also takes the onus off me remembering. If I turn it into a ritual, then everything that I know needs to get done gets done.
If I could jump in, I think I know why. I mean, when you talk about routine and habit and ritual, the big distinction, the thing that sets ritual apart from routine and habit, is the component of intention. Ritual is something that you approach from a place of conscious, deliberate action.
I think that's actually really astute, Chris. Very, and I think that you're right because, yeah, because, you know, again, ritual and habit and ritual is something that you do where you're able to shut your mind off, but only after you come into the situation with the mindful, this is the ritual to do this. And then you just flow with it. And Ty and I have lots and lots of experiences of that in the monastery or at a zendo. That's one of the things that ritual is there for, to allow you to simply flow with things and shift into an observer, an experiencer.
Well, like, Andy, that
going into your metacognition. Yeah.
What you're hitting at is exactly why routines are important for those of us with ADHD.
Right? Yeah.
Because if we have that routine and we're following that routine, that is one less thing that our mind has to be occupied.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why, for some, and I think this is, might be the difference between ADHD and, or what they refer to as the hyperactive kind of ADHD or the non-hyperactive kind, the memory, the blanking out kind.
The attentive and the non-attentive.
Thank you very much, Ty. You're right. Yeah, attentive and non-attentive. And that's why sometimes for people like me, I'm the attentive kind. And Heather is the non-attentive kind. They can clash really badly because attentive ADHD people have built these routines in order to effectively solve the problem that their neurodivergence at times creates in their lives. And then you stack them with somebody who is non-attentive and you're just like, you know, we explain everything exactly the way it needs to be done because that's how we facilitate ourselves getting the job done. And then we hand it off to them, the non-attentive kind, where all our very fine, tight explanations, very accurate and very concise, it just wah, 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 wah. And then the next thing you know, you're eating meatloaf when you asked for pizza because squirrel and, you know, just went in a different direction. When does it turn into habit, though? And are habits good or bad? I think that Mark, please. I think habit suffers from a bad... it's got bad baggage to it, the word habit.
Yeah, it's what you've done with – it's just your habits are reactive. How about – that's a nice way to put it, right? It's like you get conditioned over time to simply react in certain ways.
Salivate when the bell rings.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Yeah. And it's like if you have – I mean, think about the difference between having good habits and having bad habits, right? And like there's good habits that help you integrate better with your fellows, right? When you raise kids right, what you're really trying to do is make sure they have good habits.
Because
you
cultivate good habits.
You can't fix their thinking, but you can inculcate their habits, right? And so, you know, so you get that. And certainly rituals can become habitual, right? And it's like, it's the same set of actions again and again, right? And the nice thing, what you were saying, Andy, right, is when you guys go through your rituals, you know what the processes are and you don't have to think about them and so on.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we know the meaning behind every single movement.
But so here's the difference, right? There are, you know, the other things, like there's good habits and bad habits. There are empty rituals and there are real rituals, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the problems people have is that the rituals in their lives or their spiritual life or their regular life become so constant and unremitting and they become irrelevant. You know, you detach yourself from the meaning at some point of the ritual or the ritual stops doing the connecting that it's supposed to do. You know,
I think that's a really interesting, I think that's a whole sort of really rich topic is the hollowing out of ritual.
Well, if you think about the function that they perform, right? So anthropologically, right? So, you know, I'm getting ready to start class, you know, tomorrow morning with this stuff. And so it's in what's left of my brains. If you look at where there are rituals in human cultures, right, they're usually in places, and especially religious rituals, right, they're designed to ferry people over the more difficult points in human existence. And I think there's only like the three of them. There's birth, sex, and death.
Yep.
I think those are it. And
the Holy Trinity.
That's pretty much the whole deal. And so if you look at where our rituals are, these are steps designed to help people transit those difficult moments by giving you things to do, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of it's like a ferry. So you were talking about float. It lets you float over these difficult things by giving people stuff to do. So it's like, you know, birth, communion, right? Marriage, which are the two sexually related ones. And, you know, get people over that. And, of course, then funerals, right? Yeah. And, I can always sort of tell my touchstone for when things are truly meaningful is when the paradoxes just scream at you. And it's like paradox becomes like almost like a symptom of you're doing it right to me.
Yeah.
Cause, and so here, easy, right? People cry at weddings and they laugh at funerals. And it's like, that's like the opposite of what you should be doing, technically.
At the end of our last episode, one of the things, and this really did stick with me, Shane McGowan's funeral and everybody dancing in the aisles at the church next to his wicker casket. Yeah. That was beautiful. Yeah. That was absolutely beautiful.
People always crack up at weddings. You're thinking of all of the crazy shit that you want to say that you're not allowed to say. I think those are examples. But those rituals, I mean, when religions appropriate them properly, right, then they continue to be meaningful and so on to people at a personal level. And the same thing, habits can be done the same way. I think rituals are just habitual actions are designed for certain functions.
I think we're seeing such an exodus, particularly among younger generations.
Oh, yeah, right.
From organized religion because the ritual, which is the draw, you know, it gives you that sense of connection. The ritual has been reduced to merely habit. And so it has this emptiness to it.
Ty, what were you saying? Sorry, Chris.
As we were talking about all this, I have come across this term lately, and Andy, this may gravitate really well for you, called habitual karma. And it is probably
it's funny that you bring that up because I think I read it yesterday. That's how close
really
together we are.
The easiest way to explain karma, especially to somebody who's in a Western state of mind. Mm-hmm. An example of habitual karma is you getting up and brushing your teeth every morning. That creates a pattern that is beneficial to you. It's still habit, and it has some consciousness to it.
It sets up a chain reaction that reaches into the future. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is very odd that you mentioned that, because tomorrow I have to go in. I've got like suddenly failing teeth over on this side, so I got to go
into
the dentist.
Welcome to your 50s, boys.
It was a life of poverty that put me here, Chris.
I got a new crown coming in on Thursday.
So let me see if I'm tracking this correctly. So putting it more in Western language, Western framing, it's essentially the establishment or the spinning up of either virtuous or vicious cycles.
And we lost him.
Right.
We'll see if he jumps back in.
I thought that concept of habitual karma. And the other thing that I started noticing is when you start with a habitual karma, that starts to build or starts to become the foundation of a routine.
Oh, yeah.
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 And at the same time, the ringing forward into the future is the important thing, because that's what karma is. The greatest Western issue.
Oh, we totally draw awesome.
Yeah, we will. He'll be back. We will give Chris back. He said he's offline. I wonder if maybe power dropped for him again. Mm. He had his power drop earlier today.
Eek.
The biggest. Hold on, I'm calming Chris here.
The same applies here while Andy's doing that, Ty. You know, yeah. There's the same thing happens. There's like, you know, useful rituals and rituals that are empty. There are habits that are bad habits and good habits. There's Chris.
There he is.
And Chris is was fixing to talk about, you know, some habits inculcate virtue. Go on, Chris.
Yeah.
I was saying that just in Western thinking, and I'm asking if I've got this right, if I'm interpreting it right, that it's the establishment of virtuous or vicious cycles, essentially. Is that?
Well, here's the thing, and this is because Ty brought up the term karma. We need to clear something up about that term before we can address that, and that is the Western understanding or the Western appreciation of the idea of karma is almost always wrong.
Yeah,
it is not. Wrong. It is not what goes around comes around. It is not, you know, good versus bad things. It's karma. The word in Sanskrit simply means reaction. Action, reaction. That's it. Karma is dominoes.
The best way that I've heard it explained thus far in a really succinct way is karma is not what happens to you. Karma is what you do about it.
Yeah, and that's just it. The other idea about karma is that karma is not external to you. You are part of karma. You are part of the flow of karma.
Yeah.
So to bring the term, and I'm just itching by the term virtuous.
I can fix that.
Right. Help me out. Let's get to a zero virtue place here.
Oh, do you want? Oh, sure.
So
I'm sorry, guys. This is like, and you put me on the clock because this.
I did.
This will trigger me for days.
That's why you're here, dude.
That's true.
2.5 years later, and oh my god, you want me to philosopher? Oh, okay, yeah. I can do that.
Only we have one. Virtue is a word that has just driven me completely berserk, and in my own case, you know. And Andrew was exposed to this. It's the flu. Sorry about that. It's the English translation of a Greek word, which is erete. And it's the Latin version of that. And it's a really weird. Now, this is the misogyny of the androcentrism of Greek and Roman culture. But virtus literally means manly things.
Yes.
That's literally what it means.
Erete kind of
does that. It's the quality of somebody's really good at living.
And excellence of things.
And so the one way to get around the virtue. Why did they use that word? And the answer is because Greek got translated by a bunch of prissy prima donnas in Oxford and Cambridge back in the 1800s. Yeah. And so, oh, lads, what shall we do here? It's like, oh, virtue. It's like, of course. So,
yes.
That's my guess, my best guess.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
I was thinking that.
That's a deep cut. there's a way to fix this. And when I have to do this in class, is I have to get them to stop thinking about the word virtue when they see the word virtue. And what they really have in mind is the erete is the quality that a thing has when it really fulfills its function properly. Like a, sitting down, virtuoso.
Yeah. Right.
And then it's that's it? It's like, yeah. So a virtuous person is somebody who can play their life like a virtuoso. Like if you can, so if you can play your life the way Clapton plays the guitar, right? You're good to go. It's the virtuosity at living your life.
And see, I don't know anybody, not even
virtue,
Eric Clapton, that is wrong. Their life like that.
I do.
Yeah.
You? Pretty much.
Yeah.
And nobody's perfect. The beauty about the Greek stuff, by the way, too, is that you always get better at it. You're never top off.
I was just going to say, that's one of the things that when you get, when you walk out of Plato's cave and you actually start to kind of see some of these ideas applied in the real world.
Yeah.
The idea of erete and the idea of perfection have nothing to do with each other.
No,
they have
horrifying.
Absolutely nothing to do with each other whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they might actually kind of be anathema because one of the things included in erete is the idea of, in this instance, in this moment, I did this with such grace and with such attention to, I really answered the call of what this moment called for, playing the violin or whatever. Yeah. But that does not preclude you. The next day, the next time you pick up the violin, it is another opportunity. For arete to happen.
Yeah, perfection. Yeah. So perfection's the enemy of the good, right?
Yep.
And just while I'm, so this is the end of this particular rant for me, but because this was like a big deal for me, because I've been doing all this work on environmental ethics over the last decades now. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me why all of these modern philosophers were sticking with rights theories and utilitarianism and stuff. And I couldn't figure it out because I'd done all this Aristotle. And I thought, well, why don't you guys just use Aristotle? It'll save you all this time. It's theoretically coherent and blah, 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 blah. And I thought, well, what the hell happened? And it came back to one line at the beginning of the Nicomachean Ethics, where Aristotle says, he's really good at this stuff. He says, now, of course, the reason why we're going to study all this stuff about how to live skillfully is so that we can actually live a good life, because otherwise there's no point. And you go, well, that sounds like a really good reason. And it occurred to me, and this was like, I was actually driving down to Waukesha when this thing hit me like a thunderbolt, which was that, because what happened was Christianity happened. And the problem is that under Christianity, there's nothing you can do to make yourself good.
Nope. Yeah, it really.
But for the Greeks, of course, that's all you get to do. You spend your whole life trying to improve yourself, make yourself a better human, you know, and get better at being human.
And paying off the tab for someone else's sins. I mean,
for Christianity. Yeah, there's nothing you can do to make yourself good. And so virtue for Christianity becomes a theoretical construct rather than a practical one.
It gets shoved out of the practical world. Its role and its purpose and even its very definition change completely. And this is a fascinating conversation to me, because being raised Catholic educated by Jesuits, that's when my head exploded. Because,
by the way, who knows this stuff?
I'd spent 8 years getting inculcated into the Christian Catholic notion of virtue, which is, it's all about your value as a human being to others in society, and whether you're a good person, how well you toe the line of expectation. Right. Yeah, that's how I would define virtue in the Catholic.
All that is sort of true, right? But for the Christianity, the origin of virtue has to lie in God and the Word of God, which tells you which virtues are the right ones.
Right.
And not in your own life, which tells you better ways to live.
But then I got to the Jesuits, who exposed me to a lot of what you just described and explained. And I had to recalibrate my understanding of the concept of virtue as virtue is a state of being, and it's essentially simply a measure of your excellence at how you exist.
That's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's good Aristotle and Plato, by the way, when I
throw out a word like virtue, it's always from that latter perspective.
And it's funny, because that's not
The Christians and the Catholics like to put those two in opposition. Vice to me is just simply a failing to live up to that. It's the bottom end of that measuring stick, right?
Well, I'll start moving us out of the weeds a little bit. that's okay. They're good weeds. But for me, right? Well, I was just going to say, honestly, all of what we talked about is condensed into an important movie in my life and many others. And that, of course, it also has a nice tie-in with Wisconsin, and that is Dogma. Kevin Smith's movie Dogma, where, all you got to do is walk through the door of the church and all your sins will be forgiven. It's just like hitting the reset button.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, we're going to come back, and we've got a couple other things to talk about. This is the Narrowband Broadcast Network, where the hats... You're wherever you are listening, and we're appreciative, and we'll be back in a second. Don't go nowhere. Bye. And we're back for the final segment of Keep Your Hat On. That is Chris. That is Ty. That is Dr. Mark. We're talking habit, ritual, all that. We kind of put that to bed. Chris, did you have something you were going to add?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to tie it all up, really circle it back beautifully with a bow. You know, we talk about virtue and this excellence and in a state of being. When I was in my 20s, I came across, I spent a lot of time looking at different religions and sort of exploring different practices and things like that, and came across Jnana Yoga, or what's also called Karma Yoga, which is you devote yourself to being the best, whatever it is you are, that you can be. And so there we go. We bring it.
Do what thou
right
wilt.
Back to karma.
No, to be the whole of the law.
Wrong angle, Ty.
Well, I got to share that. I'm going to share this with you guys.
I think that really got misunderstood, because I think it is while it is from a way, way different angle, I think
to all my Thelemite friends, we'll keep this brief.
it comes to Chris's point when that statement points to whatever it is that you're doing, do it fully.
Sure. Exactly. Right. Well, and you know, like one of my favorite things from Nietzsche, of course, is sin boldly. You know, if you're going to sin, make it count.
So all right. We had this
just a quick share because this cracked me up
a couple of weeks ago. This just cracked me up, and this back to Aleister Crowley for a moment. We had this event happen in Wisconsin where one of our chancellors was found out to be creating porn online with his wife. For a number of years. You might have seen that. And I know both of them, by the way, which was really hilarious, because Carmen, people are going to go, and Carmen, who is his wife, was actually one of our deans at the Rock County campus, Andy. And Carmen is sharp as
really?
And she is sharp as a tack, man. I don't say nice things about administrators very often, but she was really good at her job. And so was, and he was always the cool chancellor, by the way, in all these meetings.
But all right.
It put Alex and I in mind of this, and we're going to start an OnlyFans page stream where she and I will debate the relative merits of Aleister Crowley and Marianne Williamson while I do her toes.
I subscribe to that.
You got to throw Madame
Lavatsky
in there.
You got her. She's here somewhere, man. I got Lavatsky. Anyway, but we thought, that hits a lot of markets right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really does.
Speaking of Dr. Mark's world, two things. For our long-term viewers and listeners, one of the things that did happen, and Mark, I'm just going to say this because I love that dog. I got a chance to meet that dog.
Oh.
I have given pets to that dog.
Yeah.
You got to meet
Boomer. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, the both times that I dropped by after I moved out here, you know, and I was just like, I was always grateful to that dog because he kept my buddy company.
He was a great soul,
pretty
man.
Iffy shit. Yeah, he was. And that's just it. And you said that he left pretty peacefully, huh?
And so lucky. I don't know if you guys have had to say goodbye to animals and stuff. And I've always been so lucky because they've let me know, like, without having, you know, you don't want it to go too long, you don't want to go too soon and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was kind of in decline. He was starting to get a little rickety on his legs, and you know, he had sort of a neuropathy. He was 15, you know, he's going on 16, but fortunately, that last week, he went really fast. And Christmas Day, it was like he was just a mess. And so the emergency vet brought him in, and they checked him over. And it was like, yeah, it was a good time to go. And he was the other thing, too, is like my pet seemed to know when it's time to go. And so he was pretty good about it. And he seemed very, it's weird. I don't think I'm projecting too much. He seemed content, and he knew that he was down for the count. And so on to his next assignment, I'm going to say.
And he had fulfilled his purpose.
And,
beautifully.
I'll put a picture of it up here.
Hashtag 108 days of dog.
Exactly. And
that's,
you know,
his
what?
Hashtag.
I took into account the day he left, and I'll put a picture of it. Back there is a picture of Boomer with his candle as he goes through the Bardo.
Thank you, brother. Yeah,
of course.
Thank you.
I might be Zen, but we still believe in the Bardo. And of course, the other news that you have, Mark, is you. I feel I'm to blame for this because I gave you travel permissions We were supposed to record last week, but you wanted to go down.
Oh, home. Like an idiot. Yeah.
What did you come back with?
COVID. I finally got it, baby. I got exposed to COVID so many times.
Get your ticket punched.
And I'm thinking, you know, it's like, oh man. And I came back and it was pretty much just a mild cold with a little congestion. Actually.
That's what you're saying. You sounded like you're getting the most friendly version of it there is.
Oh, for damn sure. And it was only yesterday, actually. One of my, I checked in with one of my buddies, Jeff Bray, and we were just yakking. He said, I'm coming off of COVID for the second time. I said, dude, you know, I got a little cold. He goes, well, that's what this was this time. I thought, God damn it. So I double checked and man, the lines popped. It was oh, what? Wait. Because this is like, you know, I've tested myself like 10 or 12 times now. I've like given people rides home from the airport who came on with COVID. And, you know, it's like, I should have had it. And this was like something walked around my vaccinations and just went, oh, look here. So a stray gene. I got one here.
Did you have to take the, or did you choose to take the
Paxlovid?
Nah. No, well, I didn't even think that this was, I didn't think this was this serious until I talked to Jeff, because honestly, it's like, I'm like on day, actually the day after I got back, this thing came down. I thought, oh, I got a cold.
Because you're back, what, Thursday?
No, I came back. I was back. Okay, I drove back Saturday.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
And then so Sunday, I was like, I feel shitty. It's like, oh no, here we go. And you know, I neti potted appropriately, and that took care of most of the symptoms. And
right.
And so anyway, yeah. So and they cleared up pretty much most of this last, but I just tested yesterday.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
Oh, I gave it to Alex. Really? Yeah, I gave it to Alex.
Share and it's share like, alike, obviously. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those like, things.
I feel
where
bad about
unless,
that.
Unless you can truly isolate, if you're in the same airspace as somebody, it's virtually impossible.
Yeah,
need to be closed up in your own room.
I checked back too because my little brother and I went out and hit Callahan Social Club. Shout out the music scene in Mobile, Alabama these days reminds
perfectly
me
healthy,
of
huh?
Austin, Texas in the 70s. Seriously. Anyway, it was like, you know, like 50 people packed into one big room with some of these great guys and the old bass player from Wet Willie. I don't know if that's a deep cut or not.
Yeah,
anyway,
it is.
Yeah. Anyway, so they were from Mobile, man, you know, along with Buffett and those guys. Anyway, but so I checked in. My brother's fine. My mom's fine. So they didn't get sick at all. And so I got this sucker someplace coming up I-55, I-57 through Illinois. Again.
I was just going to say one of those stop off at a rest stop gas station.
Somebody it loves at a truck stop it loves. Yeah, somebody got me.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it's not too bad. And I'm definitely glad to hear it in light of the fact that you haven't, you know, that your booster is not there. One of the things that we're starting to see and keep track of this is certain cases of COVID that present themselves very mildly.
Yeah, that's got to be the future.
If they don't resolve fully within 2 weeks, you should talk to your doctor about Paxlovid or another antiviral.
Give it another shot.
Yeah, because what they're kind of seeing is
does it decay into long COVID? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's a good way of saying it.
We don't want that. Can I go to class tomorrow, by the way? I'm like 6 days out now.
You really shouldn't, or if you do, you should be fully masked. And as a point of ethics, you should communicate to all your students. You should give them the option to not be there.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds okay. You know, I don't need to do much tomorrow. So that's the thing.
Wear the big face mask.
I can model good behavior and the rooms are pretty big and so I can stand far away.
Yeah.
When did you first have symptoms?
Sunday.
This past
A week ago today.
Yeah.
All right. I'll ask my kid, the epidemiologist.
CDC said it was the CDC site said it was okay, but there's no reason to know that that's, you know, that they're up to.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that normally what they say is your go time to resume normal life is from the last day that you have noticeable symptoms, not day of onset.
Oh, I thought from like last day of like fever, which has been a couple of days since I've had a fever.
And it might very well be. Did you just have like a 101 or something?
Oh,
not
even. No, nothing. It was like, and that was like Monday and Tuesday, and then it was gone.
Okay. So, well, we'll look into it. And there's
thanks.
Obviously,
let me know. That'd
yeah,
be
I was
awesome.
Just gonna say, I'll put up some scrawl here that says what to do. Because
yeah, I feel finally very privileged, way. And it's like I can imagine where this thing could go if you were weak or immune system or whatever. So,
well, anyway. I was actually really encouraged to hear that you brought up the magic N word because I don't think. And it's obviously a squink factor, but all our listeners and viewers in India, they're very well familiar with the practice of neti.
Oh,
this idea that, yeah, I mean, you're dealing with infections in your sinuses. And oh, that this is where this stuff. Yeah, right? I didn't think of that.
Sorry. Wash them off.
I don't want to, you know, we'd be worried about being demonetized on YouTube if I was. But this idea that, yeah. When you have something going on in your sinuses, how many times when you were younger were you laying there in misery going, if I could just get this stuff to move? You can. It's warm salt water.
Well,
wash that shit out of your nose.
This is the advantage of having lived on the ocean. And, you know, you go in for a swim in the cold and you do a little body surfing. And miraculously, your cold is gone after you, once in the washing machine, one time through and man, you're good to go after that.
Yeah. I think this is probably where we're going to wrap it up today.
Oh, very pleasant.
Right, exactly.
Nasal
cavities.
Blow
that shit out of your nasal. We've been struggling a little bit with connections here. So I think that this is the universe telling us that we still have ice on the lines because I've been seeing weird things.
Huh?
Let's hope that
what?
We... Yeah, what? Huh?
What? You're breaking up.
The ritual of ice.
Anyways... Do us a favor, hit like, click subscribe, all that happy horse crap. We are the Hats. We are going to be doing this again, season 7. There's no telling when we'll stop. Actually, we're not going to stop because we just get bored once a month. But do us a favor, make sure that other people know, point them in this direction. And honestly, until next time, keep your hat on because we might wind up miles from here in a pile of ice, which is still clinging to my driveway that I need to go deal with right now. So see you later, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, there's another chunk of time you can't get back. From Portland, Oregon in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, this has been Keep Your Hat On, a big little show about a whole lot of nothing in particular. Keep Your Hat On is a Now Band Broadcast Network production in association with Andrew Scott Media. Andrew Scott, executive producer. Robert Anthony and Christopher Vacano, associate producers. Our theme music was written and produced by Andrew Scott, along with help from Ron Kajawa. Website design and maintenance by Vacano Creative, Christopher Vacano Webmaster. Available on the web at VacanoCreative.com. Audio and video production by Andrew Scott Media. Available online at AndrewScottMedia.com. Hey, if you got questions, comments, or topics for the show, why don't you email the boys at talkback@kyhopodcast.com. And don't forget to like, click, and subscribe. On behalf of the boys, I'm the announcer, apparently Richard Cranium. Thanks for listening, I guess.
NBBN.
The Narrowband Broadcast Network.
The focus is on you.